Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, November 17th, exactly 1 week away from Thanksgiving Day. Go out there and get your turkey today. We'll start with the front page of the Decatur Herald and Review, and it begins with a story about Wayne Andreas. And I'm not sure if that's how he said his name, but it's A-N-D-R-E-A-S, and you from Decatur probably know. It gives no credit to who has written the article, but Dwayne Andreas recalled as generous corporate titan. Dwayne Orville Andreas, an agribusiness giant who brought the world to central Illinois, died on Wednesday. He was 98. The fourth son born to a Mennonite farming family in Minnesota, he dropped out of college, but rose from humble beginnings to become chief executive officer of Archer Daniels Midland Company in 1970, and CEO and chairman from 1972 until he stepped down from the CEO's office in 1997. He retired as chairman in 1999. Under his leadership, ADM went from a modest regional grain processor with sales of $425 million to a world-leading company with 1997 revenues of $13.9 billion. A friend of U.S. presidents and world leaders, he invited many of them to visit him in Decatur, and they came. The VIP guest list included President Ronald Reagan and former Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. He even flew Mother Teresa to Decatur in his corporate jet in 1989 so she could visit with his secretary's five-year-old son, who suffered from muscular dystrophy. Andreas and his late wife, Inez, who died in 2012, contributed generously to charities, colleges, the American Red Cross, and countless other causes. One idea close to his heart was fighting world hunger and using advances in agricultural technology to feed more people. During his lifetime, Mr. Andreas passionately believed in agriculture's ability to address hunger among the world's poor, ADM Chairman and CEO Juan Luciano said Wednesday. He used his deep understanding of global markets and extraordinary business acumen to support policies and programs that help food reach people in resource-scarce regions. After President John F. Kennedy appointed him to the American Food for Peace Council, Mr. Andreas was quoted as saying, "Food knows no boundaries. We are in the international age of agriculture." Referring to ADM's giant global workforce, Luciano added, "On behalf of ADM's 32,000 colleagues around the world, I extend condolences to the entire Andreas family." ADM had employed just 3,000 people and owned 40 processing plants, mainly in the Midwest, when Andreas had ascended to the top job in 1970. Upon his retirement, the company had more than 23,000 employees and owned 274 processing plants spanning the world. A former U.S. Senator, Robert Strauss, once described Andreas as a very able businessman, probably the ablest one I've ever known. Part of his business savvy was knowing he needed influence in high places. His list of friends and golfing partners included Republican presidential nominee Thomas Dewey and former House Speaker Thomas Tip O'Neill, a Democrat. One especially close friend was Vice President Hubert Humphrey, who was godfather to Andreas' son, Michael. Andreas knew President Ronald Reagan well, and Reagan appointed him to chair the foundation that helped meet the cost of national celebrations to mark the U.S. Constitution's 200th birthday in 1987. But plying politicians with money also led Andreas into controversy. An investigation in the time of Watergate accused Andreas of illegally contributing $100,000 to Humphrey's 1968 presidential campaign. but Andreas was later acquitted of all allegations. A $25,000 donation to President Nixon's 1972 re-election bid also caught attention during Watergate, sparking debate about unreported campaign money. The biggest scandal under his watch broke in the 1990s with news that certain company executives had taken part in a scheme to fix the price of citric acid and lysine, an animal feed additive. ADM was eventually fined $100 million. Andreas was never accused of wrongdoing, but three executives were subsequently jailed, including his son Michael, who had been the heir apparent at the time to his father's leadership role at ADM. Looking back on Andreas's life and legacy today, however, many community leaders who knew him, such as Decatur Tribune editor and former Mayor Paul Osborne, said the positives of his life far outweigh any negatives. I think what he accomplished in his life far exceeds anyone talking in negative tones about what he did or the company did, Osborne said. Andreas was one of those people who was overall bigger than the company itself. He embodied this aggressive company policy that said, we're here to grow and we're here to be on the world stage. A lot of the good things that happened in our community and with Archer Daniels Midland were the result of the forward thinking he had. Andreas was only 5'4" tall, and yet Osborne remembers him as a giant figure who brought world leaders and the world to Decatur. He described him as the kind of corporate titan we don't see so much anymore. He was a cut above about every business leader I ever knew, Osborne said. There was just such a respect for his judgment. I was at a few meetings with him, and when he walked in, the room got quiet. Everyone knew that this man was worth listening to. Marinda Rothrock, president of the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, had worked in Andreas's office for several years and described him as an icon who cared about the Decatur and Macon County communities. She said the generosity of Andreas means his name will live on forever. I guess if I had one thing to say about Mr. Andreas, it's that it will be very hard to forget someone who gave us so much to remember, Rothrock said. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf also described Andreas as an iconic figure who propelled his city to the forefront of the agribusiness world as he brought global leaders to our door. He really put Decatur on the map, and he built Archer Daniels Midland, said Moore Wolf. What he did was absolutely amazing. And Andreas was fondly remembered by philanthropist Howard G. Buffett, who moved his family to Decatur nearly 25 years ago after he was offered a position at ADM. Dwayne was the reason I moved to Decatur, Buffett said. He was a great teacher and he gave me some amazing opportunities. Our next article on the front page is written by Justin Kahn, who is an H&R staff writer. Deluxe Playground Approved for Overlook Adventure Park. The Decatur Park District made another attraction at Overlook Adventure Park a reality at its Board of Commissioners meeting on Wednesday, approving the purchase of a playground. The new playground will be between Cherry Berry and what will eventually be the new water park near US 36 at 2501 East Nelson Park Road. Park District Director of Operations Ryan Raleigh said the playground will look similar to the Scoville Zoo playground but have different features. It's the same theme as far as the high-peaked roofs and color scheme. It's a scheme we use throughout the district, Raleigh said. It has slides, decks, and a musical component like the one at the zoo, but also has some high rope features and things to climb on and up. The total cost for the playground is $146,000, but that cost will be split because of a matching grant from playground equipment manufacturer Game Time. the $80,135, half the cost plus shipping, the Park District is paying for comes from an open space lands acquisition and development grant from the state in 2015. The Game Time grant program allowed us to get a bigger playground for the money, which was nice, Raleigh said. It's something they've done the last 2 years. Game Time is the main supplier we use. Most of our playgrounds are Game Time. We work with them to design it. Raleigh said construction on the new playground will have to wait until the design for the new water park, approved at the November 2nd meeting, is established. Because of the grant, the matching grant from Game Time, we had to get it approved now, but we can't do this until we know exactly what we're doing with the pool, Raleigh said. We're dealing with different elevations and how to get them to match up. There's no set time, but it could be late next summer. The Overlook Adventure Park portion of the lakefront development at Nelson Park already includes a miniature golf course and restaurants Cherry Berry and Ted's Taters. A high ropes course and batting cages are expected to be up and running by spring 2017, with the $9.2 million water park coming in 2018. The ropes course, batting cages and playground, as well as a new pavilion in Nelson Park by the dog park, will be paid for out of the 2015 Open Space Lands Acquisition and Development Grant that was delayed because of the state budget impasse. The grant is matching, with the state supplying $400,000 and the Park District matching the $400,000 plus $197,830 from its capital fund. In other business, the board voted to levy $9,602,500. As was previously reported, the tax rate remained $1.15 per $100 of equalized assessed valuation. We turn inside now, the local section of the Decatur Herald and Review Online, and our next article is written by Allison Petty, who is also an H&R staff writer. Phosphorus limits could cost Decatur big. A push to reduce the amount of phosphorus in Illinois waterways could cause a major headache for the Sanitary District of Decatur and its taxpayers. The district's Board of Trustees heard a status report Wednesday about the potential for new discharge limits and an estimated price tag near $100 million to comply with them. Why so costly? Drastically reducing phosphorus levels would require many elements of the treatment plant to be replaced before their time, Executive Director Kent Newton said. If we fight it, it's going to be expensive, Newton told the board. If we don't fight it, it's going to be expensive. Oh, boy. The overall effort to reduce phosphorus comes from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency because of concerns about what's commonly called the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. The combination of excessive nitrogen and phosphorus from the Mississippi River allows little marine life to survive at its mouth. States have come up with individual plans to reduce nutrient output. In Illinois, the goal is ultimately to cut that output by 45%, which could be achieved in part by giving wastewater treatment plants permit limits on how much they can discharge. Decatur currently does not have a limit, Newton said, nor is there algae growing in the Sangamon River that could suggest a problem. Environmental groups, which have already sued Chicago's Water Reclamation District over its phosphorus discharge level, are offering a deal. If the state's wastewater treatment facilities agree to limit their output to 0.5 milligrams per liter by 2030, the groups will stop pursuing legal challenges. Many other cities are willing to agree because they either don't discharge much phosphorus or recently rebuilt their aging treatment plants, Newton said. But Decatur's large food-based industrial customers make it different than other cities. A 2013 study showed that the district took in 25 milligrams per liter of phosphorus. After treatment, it discharged 15 milligrams per liter. The presentation Wednesday was informational. District leaders are continuing to discuss their options, and there is no time limit for resolution. In other business, the board discussed its tax levy proposal for the coming year. The roughly $3.9 million levy represents a $314,000 increase from the previous year, which Newton said could be offset by not increasing user fees as much as planned. Newton estimated that the owners of a $77,500 home would see a $4.39 increase on their property tax bill, bringing the district's total of the bill to roughly $72,000. The board is expected to vote on the levy at its next meeting, December 14th. Our next article was written by Danette Beckett, who's an H&R staff writer, this out of Decatur. Downtown Decatur ready to celebrate Christmas. Retail shops, restaurants, and other businesses in Decatur's downtown area are starting the holidays with added details to help make the season more special. This is going to be a holiday season to remember, said Tim Gleason, Decatur's city manager. A collaboration like this really proves we are limitless. Gleason and other community members announced some of the added events during a news conference Wednesday afternoon in Decatur's Central Park. Marinda Rothrock, president of the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce, announced this year's Decatur Downtown Holiday theme, Deck the Town. She also explained some of the extra details the chamber has added to make the area more visual than past seasons. For example, this year the transfer house will have its own holiday decor. Special lighting with graphics placed inside the windows will illuminate the popular tourist attraction. It decorates it up a little bit, said Jared Cox, events coordinator of the Decatur Chamber of Commerce. It is Decatur's iconic image. Jerry Johnson, Decatur Area Arts Council President, said the holiday season and the arts go together. The sights, the sounds, the smells, everything that makes the season special is connected to the arts, he said. Visual arts have been an important part of downtown's holiday scenes. Events such as the Madden Arts Center articles throughout the month and Christmas Walk on December 7th draw many to the area. The special Pop Local retail store, Shop Till You Pop, has been added to the shopping events. The retail store will be located in the Haynes and Essex building on December 9 and 10. According to Cox, the corner was a popular attraction during the holidays. This puts something in that corner for a little bit, he said. As well as the visual arts, Johnson announced the list of performing arts events taking place in downtown Decatur, including having a Secret Santa concert at the Civic Center, holidays around the world at the Decatur Club, and Merry Texas Christmas, y'all, featuring country music act Sleep at the Wheel at the Lincoln Square Theater. Local theater groups will perform holiday shows. The holiday festivals kick off at 5:30 p.m. Saturday with a lighting ceremony minutes before the Christmas parade begins. The parade theme is It's a Wonderful Life. Throughout the day, free downtown activities will include holiday art making at the Madden Arts Center, ice skating at the Decatur Civic Center, and a holiday movie at Lincoln Square Theater. Following the parade, the Santa and Central Park House will be open. Community Marketing Manager Nicole Bateman said these events are beneficial to everyone involved. It helps us to continue to tell our story about the transformation our community is going through, she said. All the organizations and businesses, not just in downtown, but throughout our community, have really pulled together. In a significantly less happy article, this one from Crime and Courts column written by Huey Freeman, who is the Crime and Courts staff writer for the Decatur Herald and Review. McGee sentenced to 15 years for attempted rape of an elderly woman. David McGee was sentenced to the maximum term of 15 years in prison after a jury convicted him of attempted aggravated criminal sexual assault for trying to rape an elderly woman. At the sentencing hearing on Tuesday, Circuit Judge Timothy Stedman said that after hearing from the state that McGee previously sexually abused a 15-year-old girl, he had to sentence him to the maximum term for the protection of the community. His history of criminality is quite substantial, Stedman said. McGee, 37, was convicted October 4th after a woman in her 70s testified that he tried to rape her after threatening her with a butcher knife, trying to tie her up with duct tape, and threatening to kill her cat. With credit for time served in jail since June 2014, McGee will be eligible for parole in 2021. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Lindsay Shelton, who recommended the maximum sentence for the Class 1 felony, presented testimony from two Decatur police detectives as evidence in aggravation. Prior cases of sexual abuse by McGee were presented by Detective Joe Patton. In a 2010 Greene County case, the victim was a 15-year-old developmentally disabled girl with a mental age of 9. She reported that he sexually assaulted her and tried to force her to commit other acts. He was convicted of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, sentenced to 4 years in prison, and ordered to register as a sexual predator for life. McGee was also accused of sexually abusing a 14-year-old girl in Florida in 2007. Detective Ron Borowczyk, Borowczyk, said he found evidence on the laptop computer in McGee's residence of, quote, granny pornography, end quote, featuring women older than 60. Stedman sustained an objection by Assistant Public Defender David Ellison as to its admissibility because there was not enough evidence to say it was him viewing it. Before the hearing started, McGee argued in support of a motion for a new trial. I don't feel like I had a fair trial, McGee said as he sat at the defense table with Ellison. He said he believed the jurors had done background checks on him prior to trial, although they were ordered not to do so. He said he wanted to read reports of the two other arresting officers, although he admitted he did not know if they ever wrote reports. He said he believed his attorney should have argued a lot more stronger for him. Ellison argued that there was insufficient evidence for a conviction, including no forensic evidence connecting McGee to the knife or duct tape. Stedman denied the motion. He said some of those issues had already been litigated and settled. If there's one witness, and that witness is credible, that's sufficient, Stedman said. There was also other evidence that corroborated her testimony. In a brief report out of Marshall, Illinois, two charged in death, Carla A. Kelly of Paris and Eric A. Wyckoff of Marshall, have been charged with murder regarding the death of a man whose body they allegedly hid in May near Wyckoff's home. Six counts of first-degree murder were filed against Kelly, 45, and Wyckoff, 46, on Tuesday in Clark County Circuit Clerk. Court, I think they meant, in connection with the death of Dennis M. Bates, 57. Kelly and Wyckoff were arrested on May 5th on charges of being in possession of a stolen 1993 Chevrolet pickup truck belonging to Bates and concealing the homicidal death of Bates. Kelly and Wyckoff have both pleaded not guilty to these charges. Kelly has a preliminary hearing December 7th. Wyckoff is scheduled to appear in court today. From the Government and Politics column written by Ryan Boyles, we have a story that Decatur Township Trustees MIA as tax levy looms. For the second straight week, the only action seen at the Decatur Township was due to a special meeting of the electors. The electors voted Wednesday night to grant the township's Board of Trustees the ability to find a new tenant for its space. The board will have to prepare information on the non-leased space and place it out for bids for office space, business, and related purposes. The total square footage of the space was not available during the meeting, but a floor plan shows the office that the space contains five offices, space for a supervisor and conference room, and an area for a receptionist. The space is now available after the departure earlier this month of Lutheran Child and Family Services of Illinois. The loss of the tenant will cost the township an annual rent income of $76,000. When the board finally comes together and acts on the voters' resolution remains to be seen, as Wednesday marked the third straight week the Board of Trustees meeting was canceled due to the lack of a quorum. The board has not met since its controversial 3-2 vote on October 5th to make drastic cuts to the salaries of the incoming elected officials. The cuts varied per position, with trustees going from $100 per meeting to $60 per meeting, with a cap of $120 a month. The road commissioner was cut $500, while the clerk was cut by $18,000 and the supervisor by $15,000. Wednesday would have been the last day the board could have made any changes to the salaries for elected officials. Under state law, salaries must be set at least 180 days before the new term begins. Supervisor Lisa Stanley and Trustee Michael Smith, who both voted against the cuts, have been present for the past 3 weeks. Trustees Amy Roof and Debbie Sheets, who both voted for the cuts, have been absent. Trustee Susan Gant Reynolds, who was the deciding vote in favor of cutting the salaries, resigned a week after the October 5th meeting due to moving out of the township. Yeesh, sounds like a problem. There's a little more to that article, but I'm afraid I miscalculated and we don't have the time. Perhaps I'll be able to come back to it in our next half hour. But right now, it's time for us to take a brief break, and then we will be back. So this has been Ruth. Those of you who have to leave, we will not be here on Thanksgiving Day. I will not be reading. I'm sure we'll have some special programming, but I will be back the week after that. And you all take care. The rest of you, hang tight. We're going to be back in just a moment.